Chasing charm and strange. And I know that there are no straight answers to what should I call this thing I feel. But love keeps pulling me downward, pulling me downward, pulling me downward.
Down. turn that off because that last song was kind of annoying. All right, you can hear me pretty good.
Yeah,
I can hear you. This is awesome.
All right,
sorry people that it always ends up being like 4, 5, 6 minutes late. I'm slowly picking it up. At least the camera, the Facebook stream works this time, so that's good. People in the background, hi, Ben Harrow, you get a wave. And Mike, you also get a wave. So this is good. All right, so right off the bat, you're listening to Man V Mob Radio. I'm your host, Patrick Clerkin. I have my guest, Ryan, in studio, and this is 91.5 FM, WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. I do still have one thing left to do on the board, which is the pre-show check-in, but I wanted to kind of say right off the bat that, so a lot is going on right now, obviously, between the coronavirus and the markets today in particular.
Yeah.
I want to ask people to keep a level head. I want to remind people that, to paraphrase FDR from way back, that fear itself is something that you need to worry about, and to, you know, be cautious and be careful with the things that you read, and to not overly panic, because then that becomes a problem in and of itself. So I just want to remind people of that. And, you know, we're all in this together. And it obviously affects different people in different ways, but I just kind of wanted to start off tonight's program saying that. So be careful, be cautious, don't trust everything you read. That's it. Want to add anything to that?
That's awesome. On the other hand, they locked down the entire country of Italy, which is...
Oh, it actually shifted to the full country. I heard originally it was just the north half, right?
As of today, I think it's an unofficially, officially entire country's in quarantine.
Is that the only country in Europe?
I heard through the grapevine from relatives that Israel is halting all flights.
Okay.
As of like 2 days from now.
That is so,
or something like that. I'm probably messing up the you know, specific parameters.
But. Yeah, the exact details I usually get wrong too, and then I have to correct them after the fact. So if you're slightly wrong on that, that's okay. But yeah, that's the gist of it. It's kind of crazy. So my aunt and uncle were just in Italy, not that, I think a couple days back. They had been there for like 3 weeks or something like that. And they are quarantining themselves.
As they should, yeah.
Yep. But they really just escaped that. I think they basically, their flight took off. It was like probably, I'm kind of imagining it was like Argo, you know, at the end when they're escaping the airport.
Yeah. The lovely Hollywood moment at the end of Argo.
Exactly. The Hollywood moment. So aside from the news, finally, on Saturday, I saw it for the first time. You saw it for the second time. And it's kind of applicable because of the idea of viruses. But Parasite, that movie, the Korean movie that won Best Picture.
Yes, sir.
Really freaking good. Loved
it. We briefly discussed, you know, our thoughts as we walked out. It was a little cold, so we couldn't have too much of a prolonged discussion.
It was freezing outside, yeah.
Which is, yeah, it's, what, 66 in sunny Boston today.
Oh, it was gorgeous.
It was gorgeous. Anyway, yeah, so we briefly kind of touched on our feelings. I mean, again, I think part of the reason you went is because I was hyping it up so much.
Oh,
and
yeah.
In your,
yeah, that played a role.
From your response, it seemed like it absolutely met the hype. No disappointments.
Was that a question? Or
It was a question, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Really, no. I went in not knowing what to expect at all, and I actually thought, like I referenced at the beginning, that I forgot what I was walking into, and I thought it was that other Korean movie, Burning that you had recommended, and then I was like, oh, wait, no, this is another movie, and I don't really know what this is about at all from the trailer, so I'm kind of excited. I like going in like that. Trailers reveal way too much these days, and
agreed.
I was really excited.
I don't think I've seen the trailer to this day afterwards, out of context, so...
Yeah, so, I mean, the trailers from what I saw on YouTube don't really reveal much at all.
I'll still consult trailers if it's something that I'm on the fence about.
Yeah.
Or that, something that...
Same with movie reviews, right?
Right. But this, it's a director that I trusted. All of the initial viewings were that it was this incredible achievement. So, yeah, I saw it, like, opening weekend to try to, you know, divorce myself from the discourse as much as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I completely get that.
But yeah, no, I'm glad it it met your somewhat high expectations.
It was one of those movies that was just, and these are the movies that I like more than actual what is classified as horror. Is it was unsettling in so many ways.
Yeah.
It's just extremely unsettling, and really captures that sense of dread at certain points.
Right.
And also actually has a deeper message to it as well, which I thought, you know, bravo.
Yeah, so I don't know if you were... When Get Out came out, mm-hmm. that was 2 years ago now at this point, almost exactly, right? That was March 2018, I think.
I like how you have that documented.
Yeah. I think he... By he, I mean the director, Jordan Peele, kind of coined this phrase of like a social thriller.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, Parasite was the natural next step in that kind of evolution in that under this umbrella of new films. Because it's kind of like what you talked about. All the tension is realistic. I mean, Get Out is Get Out. There's some, you know, weird brain surgery going on.
Yep.
I'm not insinuating that that's obviously a procedure that's possible in the real world. But the actual tension is rooted in real things that everyday people face, right?
Mm-hmm.
Racial, class, inequality, struggles that we're all, or should be at least somewhat familiar with. So it's not a, even in, you know, classical horror movies, often the scary monster represents something. But this is more surface level in a good way,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that it's not overly draped in metaphor while still having many levels to it.
Interesting, yeah. And the metaphorical thing, I like that, right. I kept saying that over.
Right, 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 right. Exactly.
Metaphor.
but it's very aware of itself in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I had read about a year or so ago in an article, some publication, I don't remember right now, but basically they were saying that one of the scariest things for people is category violation. So when something... basically doesn't fit neatly into a box that it is
interesting.
Perceived to that it should fit into, then that freaks people out. And that's why you see a lot of monsters that are mixes between different things, different creatures and different entities, is like you can't clearly explain what it is at a glance, and that terrifies people. It's like something deeper in our brains. It's like why shadows freak people out, and why kind of the fear of the unknown, right? The thing that we can't classify.
Shadows.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think about that a lot now with what causes dread and horror is generally people
right.
freak out when they
right.
say, I can't clearly define what this is.
Yeah, no, I understand. It's kind of like of a broader existential threat.
Mm-hmm.
And the fear of the unknown is what, you know, the fear is really about. I totally hear you.
Hmm.
I think the other Get Out comparison is obviously that it managed to blend the comic and incredibly heightened moments of chaos tones in a way that didn't feel clashing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There was a natural ebb and flow to the more, I don't want to say carefree, but the more lighthearted first half.
Yeah.
Build up until the twist and then the eventual fallout from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was less on the nose.
Mm-hmm.
From what I felt, you sometimes when it's like the characters in a movie or a book or something are named in such obvious ways as to symbolize something, you're like we were talking at the end of last week's episode about Inception, and you were talking about Ariadne, like
right.
isn't that a Greek mythological
yep.
entity who like leaves the maze or something like that?
Yep.
So that frustrates me when it's too much like, hey, we're just gonna handhold you all
yeah,
the way
it's,
through
it's
this
lampshading and right exactly.
Okay, so did you have another comment on Parasite, or I was going to move on to actually
the sure.
You do?
No, take it away.
So the Aaron Hernandez documentary I watched this weekend on Netflix, have you seen that?
I haven't.
And any interest at all, or do you just kind of feel like it would just be generic? And
I heard some conflicting reports about how exploitative it was.
Okay.
And how genuine the love interest aspects were, and if it was
the
sort
gay
of
relationship.
Yeah, the gay, homosexual, bisexual, whatever you want to clarify. The fact that his sexuality was the, I mean, I haven't seen it, but it mm-hmm. seemed like that was one of the two or three primary investigations.
Yeah, that they talked about how the prosecution wanted to pursue it, but they wanted to keep it somewhat constrained so that it wouldn't become salacious, like in turn into basically what the OJ case was back in the 90s. And the judge said, no, you're either going all in or you're not going to get anything. And right. so they just, they shied back from it.
Right.
I will say that I didn't really know what to expect going in. Once again, like I watched the trailer a while back. But
yeah, I mean, it's something you were aware of as it happened.
Yeah. Oh, no, I remember the original event. But I mean, I didn't know what to expect with this documentary. And so it's right. three episodes, about an hour each.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that the aspects of it that I actually did like were that it did talk about the gay relationship, although I don't really know if that, how exploitative that was. So it wasn't really like central, but it was just a okay. piece of the story. And then they also mentioned CTE, but they didn't make it central once again, which I liked. And then they also mentioned, CTE is chronic something encephalopathy or something like that. It's like brain damage, the NFL, yeah, that whole scandal.
It's the fact that repeated sub-concussive levels of trauma are just as bad as concussions, basically.
Yeah.
If you have 10 almost concussions, it's the same as 3 concussions.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Oversimplifying, but that's basically what CTE yeah. means.
Okay,
right?
That makes sense. I'd never heard it. I know you're oversimplifying it, but I never heard it like that, and right. I like that. Okay. And then the third thing that I actually really liked is that they talked about Odin Lloyd. They talked about actually who he was, and they interviewed his friends and his family.
The victim.
The victim, the guy that was actually killed by Hernandez. And I thought that was really important because it made me think of the OJ case and how the Goldman family was just completely shunted to the side because it was such a high-profile murderer that it was, you know.
Yeah.
I really like that aspect. So anyway, that's all I really have to say about it, but, you know, check
yeah,
it out.
Yeah, I didn't mean to write it off. It's just I hadn't got a chance, and the fact that I heard so many conflicting opinions meant it wasn't necessarily at the top of my to-do list.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. That's all.
Another thing that I had a lot of, I was doing a blood donation on Sunday, which was like a drawn out process because it was white blood cells. So I had like literally 4 hours in the chair to watch Netflix. And so I finished the
it's
Hernandez.
It's a long time with a needle in your arm.
It was a long time. Yeah, I actually did feel like in Inception where you have the thing, two tubes.
Are you allowed to go to sleep? Or is
I felt like it would be a bad idea. Like okay. I would roll over and the needles would still be in my arms.
Yeah,
you know?
That's totally fair.
So I watched, I finished up the Hernandez thing and then I started watching, it was about actually outbreaks in general and kind of how the scientists and the people who work on this stuff, like for their careers.
Epidemiologists.
Yeah, epidemiologists, how they really kind of have to plan for this stuff nonstop. I thought it was pretty interesting.
Right.
And
was there a specific case study that they were?
First of all, they were talking about how everything that has started in the 2010s or since the start of the new, actually, no, is this ever since World War II in the latter half of the second yeah. century or of the 20th century, everything has started in China. It's generally always started by animals. And they were talking about how with, people don't know about this, but with the Spanish flu, just after World War I, returning soldiers brought this back all across the world. And 50 million people died from Spanish flu. And that was more people than that died in World War I and World War II. And that was at a time before airplanes and factory farms. And this is, I'm not saying this to freak people out, but this is stuff like this has happened before and it puts it in perspective, and this doesn't have to be bad at, you know, like as bad as it could be if public panic doesn't ensue and cause worse.
Yeah, well, it's
stuff.
A difficult tightrope between being proactive mm-hmm. and inciting panic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like the fact that Italy went on quarantine, it's not because there's 50 million sick people, it's because it's a more or less preventative measure to contain it at its current state.
Right on.
You know?
Yeah.
At the same time, it can be misconstrued as like some apocalypse thing where it's like, oh, this is the epicenter. It's the whole country's got it. It's not true.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what's the best way to handle that spread of information.
Mm-hmm.
But inherently being proactive and taking necessary measures is what creates sort of that alarmist atmosphere in the first place.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So yeah, it's kind of an unfortunate give and take.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that get themselves like worked up, and then when they, it's like a positive feedback loop,
right, exactly.
where like they get themselves worked up, and then that gets them more worked up, and I don't harbor any illusions that a huge portion of people are just going to, regardless of what's done, be irrational, and I'm just kind of asking the more rational people to not fall into that trap of also being irrational based on the confusion.
Yeah,
like if you just like have the right frame of mind and kind of just watch out and don't be too susceptible to misinformation. But okay, so that documentary series aside, I just thought it was a really good one. It's like 6 episodes. I was curious what your, we kind of got cut off at the end of the last episode, and I had brought up how I had liked Chris Nolan movies and Inception I had seen again in particular, and you had sort of started to
explain I was starting to make a point.
Yeah. I'm sorry to reintroduce the point.
No,
we could
absolutely. The line of reasoning that I was on is that, again, Ariadne, we said, right? Mm-hmm. That the purpose of her character is to be the audience surrogate. It's so that she can go into an unfamiliar situation, ask the questions, because we are unfamiliar with the situation, mm-hmm. right? It's classic trope in all of media. The problem is that in most movies, that stops one third of the way in.
Mm.
When you understand the stakes and the rules of the world, she is asking questions to Leonardo DiCaprio until the very last 10 minutes of the runtime.
I do remember that, yeah.
When they're in the tower, she's like, what happens if we jump now? And what happens if we miss the kick? And what happens
in
if
limbo,
we shoot?
Yeah.
Yeah, in limbo. And I think it's a problem of an incredibly dense world,
yeah.
that literally folds in upon itself to a degree where the stakes were changing, and there's no easy way to convey that without mm-hmm. checking in
without
every
continuous
10 minutes
explanation.
And continuous explanation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I struggle because it's like, was he just too ambitious and the story was too hard to tackle? I don't think so.
Hmm. It was pretty freaking ambitious. I'll say that watching it a second time made me appreciate that it actually was smarter than I had originally thought, in the sense
I think he had it all planned out. It's the sort of thing where it's like when companies test products, you can't just show it to the engineers.
Yeah.
Because the engineers know how it works, so they won't ask the right questions of people that have no reference whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost like he tried to curb that by having this constantly be explained, but it's almost like, I'm not even sure it works.
Mm-hmm.
How long ago did you see it? A week and a half?
About 2 weeks ago, probably.
If you can outline for me who was in the subject of whose dream of who was hosting who in each of the 4 interwoven steps they were in, I will buy you lunch. Right? It's
mm-hmm.
you. At no point did I fully understand the relationship between the dreamer and the subject and all these things. Especially not my first time, and even the second or third, it's like you need to take notes.
Do you think it could be a part cop out where he's just saying, the director Chris Nolan is saying that if you don't understand this, then that's the point, you're not supposed to understand it. The layers
no.
of consciousness are just so complex
no.
that okay, you'd think that there were actually
because
loose fibers to this
they,
plot.
They do. It's not that they don't tell you those things.
Mm-hmm.
They do, and then it's so dense that you kind of forget and lose track.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like, have you ever seen the movie Primer?
Nope.
It's famous for being incredibly complicated, and that's a movie that literally I don't think anybody in the world could understand on their first try. It's a time travel movie where basically every time that they time travel, they inadvertently, at least in the beginning, make a copy of themselves.
Oh, okay.
So there's, I think, between 7 and 11 copies of themselves interacting with each other in the same one, more or less. It's been a very long time. And, they only start to understand how it works like halfway through.
Okay.
The point that I'm making is I think that fits into that category.
Okay.
Where if you actually sat down and spent basically the entire runtime taking notes and planning it out, people have done it where they've reconstructed exactly, at this point, the 6th copy of the main character interacts with the 3rd copy of his friend, and this is when this exchange happened. You can't actually piece it together.
Okay.
But that's kind of not the point.
Yeah. You're just supposed to kind of in that situation, if you're watching that movie for the first time and you're actually trying to enjoy it, you're just supposed to put faith.
You're supposed to take a step back.
You're supposed to put faith in the director, right? And just say, like, they figured it out. I don't have to.
Right.
It just isn't going to make sense, a lot of it.
Right, because they're not over reiterating the rules and exactly how it works. It's more of them being overwhelmed.
Okay.
So you're also overwhelmed.
Yeah, it has to be a basic buy-in of, like, this person is smarter than I am, so I'm just going to trust them.
Right, right. I mean, yeah, and it's an interesting movie. It's not my favorite. I think it's fun for that element of, like, complete just wave of all this happening at once.
Well, when did Primer come out? Is this an American movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Famous actor or actress in it? Or
no, that's actually kind of the point. It's like, I think the director is the star.
Okay.
And I think the budget is like $15,000 or something. Like, it was famously low budget. There's only like three people in the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, I think, what helped propel it into being sort of notorious.
Okay.
Was that it was all no names done for no money. And they kind of came up with this crazy, crazy story that's, again, almost impossible to follow. But can actually be done. So it kind of got like that, almost like college bro thing of like, dude, you got to check out this movie. It's like, oh, it's so crazy. But... And again, I don't think that's even a better movie than Inception. That's not what I'm saying. I was just trying to draw a comparison between something where it's overly complex and that's okay, and it's overly complex and I try to explain it, it doesn't really work, and they're still asking questions at the 11th hour, and the narrative is kind of loosely... I think that's a Christopher Nolan problem.
Yeah.
I really do like his vision, his ambitiousness in general, but almost every single one of his movies have something like that.
Well,
you have the Interstellar thing, which we talked about before.
Yep.
Where
Anne Hathaway says, the other thing that goes through time and space, aside from gravity, is love.
Right, and you're never sure whether you're supposed to take that at face value or if it's supposed to be like, oh, she got it wrong, and it's unclear. And then you have the entire last 30 minutes where they're in a bookcase of 18 dimensions. And, I mean, it's another one where there was a lot of noise about how he consulted with astrophysicists, and the model of the black hole was like one of the most accurate, and like they poured so much resources into it, and it was this massive creation, and it was like true to science, and they built all this stuff around the space travel, and then by the end they threw realism out the window.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, when's the last time you've seen the Batman movies? This is funny. I saw a tweet about this today actually, where do you remember the third one? Clearly.
I do, kind of. I remember.
So the
Bane.
Pivotal first, right? Bane goes into like the Gotham Stock Exchange.
Yeah,
it's like New York, and deletes the stock market. He's there for 10 minutes, and then the next day, it's like, oh, Christian Bale or Bruce Nolan doesn't have any money anymore. This is wild. That's not how money works.
Yeah.
I think, to give him credit, it was supposed to be that he somehow fabricated trades to have his puppet be the controlling leader in Bruce Wayne's company, but like that's what kicks off the entire movie, and it doesn't make any goddamn sense whatsoever.
Most of these systems, though, are a black box to people, average viewers, so they just suspend their disbelief and go, I'm not going to try to understand this.
I guess.
It's a little bit of a... bittersweet aspect of your mind, in the sense of like you see I'm saying like my mind too, though, is like I look deeper at things, and like it can take you down rabbit holes and be like, this doesn't connect to this, where it's like
there's a point, that's okay. You can nitpick any movie and find something. You can find something in Parasite where you're like, ah, it doesn't really add up if you spend enough time. These, I think, kind of fall apart under not super intense scrutiny.
But there's tons of people who like so many people that don't go over that threshold of scrutiny, and like that's the whole ignorance is bliss, like I enjoy this because I just don't question it at all,
right?
So yeah, that's the flip side.
It's marketed as like everybody in America should see this. It's not like an especially cerebral film. I hear what you mean.
Did the Batman movies experiment with time jumps? Because I'm like, I'm definitely slow with on the uptake with things sometimes, and I started to actually look at the Nolan movies in their entirety. And the first one, you had Memento. Obviously, the guy has amnesia.
He has a movie before that, actually.
Oh, it did. Okay.
Following.
Following? I have not seen Black Following.
I believe I've seen all of his.
Okay. Memento, the main character has an amnesia, so obviously. You have time jumping, and then you have...
Well, it progresses from the beginning and end of the story and kind of meets in the middle.
Okay.
That, I think, is probably his most... It's between that and The Prestige for me.
Oh, I haven't seen that. Okay.
The Prestige. I'll check that out. The Prestige is the one where I actually, I take it back. I think the Prestige is his pinnacle. That's his apex.
I will check that out.
Yeah.
And then obviously you have Inception, where each layer of the dream has different depths of time that go by.
Well, the Prestige is kind of cutting back and forth too.
Oh, it does? Okay.
Yeah. So there's two rival magicians, played by Christian Bale, and, who played Wolverine?
Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman, thank you. And they're reading each other's diaries.
Yep.
Which are then very extended flashbacks. Like, the first half of the movie is technically them... It's like where they start reading it, and then the narrative becomes what you're seeing.
Yeah.
So you almost might lose track of that, but the point is that it's constantly cutting between them reading each other's diaries until it, like, reaches the current state of time, and then advances from there. So you're right, it is something that he experiments with a lot. Obviously, Dunkirk.
Yeah,
kind of the main gear of Dunkirk.
I was trying to think of... Dunkirk was timing all of the withdrawal efforts, right?
There's three parallel lines.
Saving the French and the British.
Right, yeah. There's the men on the shore.
Yeah, like the men in the air and the men on the boat, right?
The men on the boat. And I believe it's like the men is over 3 weeks and the boat's over 3 days and the plane's over 3 hours.
So it's coordinating every aspect of the rescue effort. That's where the timing is in Dunkirk.
Right. And then they all kind of meet at the conclusion.
Okay. And then obviously for people listening, because I know obviously you know this, but with Interstellar, the time shift was with gravitation and being near the black hole and going down on the planet is like 100 years back on Earth or something. Yeah, like 17 years.
27 actually, I think.
Yeah. I look forward to Tenet, which is the new Chris Nolan movie coming out.
Fully embracing that. Yeah, movies aren't tangentially about time travel or time manipulation anymore. Yeah. That's the whole damn movie.
Yep, pretty much.
I am too. Yeah. I am too. It maybe him embracing what he really wanted to make movies about will be a clearer narrative.
Yeah.
We'll see.
And I have to say that I really like Rob Pattinson's career trajectory because I previously didn't really associate with him at all, particularly because he was just like, oh, I do these teen drama movies.
He's been on a last couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you've seen Good Time or The Lighthouse.
No, I haven't seen The Lighthouse or Good Time.
Okay.
You saw the space one, whatever that was.
High Life.
Yeah, High
That's
Life.
That's true, actually. I forgot about that one. Yeah.
It's basically a space prison orbiting Earth or out in deep space.
I think they just shot it out. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's... Interesting movie.
Yeah.
Between those three, especially the two that you haven't seen, he's just been putting in stellar performances.
Awesome.
And between Batman and the new Nolan movie, I think it's weird to say that he's going to break out, but it is almost like he was fully on the scene for Twilight, regressed, took all these smaller parts, slipped out of the, you know, average person's media consciousness, and is circling back to kind of re-break through, I guess.
Yeah.
To the main stage, which I'm excited for him to pull that off.
I saw an interview with him on Howard Stern a while back, and he seems like a guy who realized that the Hollywood environment he was in was just too damn preppy, and the stuff that he was being cast in was just not fulfilling.
Yeah. No, he seems to have like a good awareness of his career and his role in Hollywood, and that's what I mean. I think... It's always interesting, like Daniel Radcliffe, you know, and Harry Potter buddies kind of did the same thing.
Yeah,
right.
That's true.
Where
he played like a neo-Nazi in a movie, and then he went and did the Lifeboat movie, what the hell?
Swiss Army Man.
Yeah,
Swiss Army Man.
Not a Lifeboat movie, but he was a boat briefly.
Right. I mean, he did the Broadway plays. He was in that Horns movie, which he just kills it with the American accent there.
I hadn't seen that. Yeah,
it's not very good.
He's like a demon guy, right? He's got, at least he has...
I honestly do not remember it very clearly, but okay. Yeah, something like that. I honestly think it's most notable for him pulling off like a flawless American accent, which is always funny. I don't know, I think we've had this talk before, about how interesting it is that British actors seem to constantly be able to fool American audiences, and apparently the reverse is like not even remotely true.
Yeah, Americans are bad with language. Have we not figured that out
yet? Right. But, I mean, still, they're actors.
Yeah. I know.
All over you, Laurie. Everybody from The Wire. It's just, yeah.
That dude from The Walking Dead, which I stopped watching a long time ago, the main character, Rick Grimes, he was British as well.
Oh, see, I didn't even know that. I didn't watch Walking Dead. But
there are tons of people who you just go, really? What? That person?
Right.
Okay, so I don't know if you have any other like takes or movie suggestions or anything, but I was going to switch to not deep in depth per se, but or you know, like controversial opinions, but with politics last week with Super Tuesday.
Yeah.
I was curious if you had any opinions on kind of what went down or anything that you wanted to say on it.
I trust polls less and less.
Mm-hmm.
So in the lead up, in the last few days, I mean, I read a lot about this. I'm constantly on Twitter, and mm-hmm. there was a lot of buzz about Texas going to Bernie.
Yeah.
And it's hard to really put a finger on it specifically, but if it was the last minute endorsements or from Klobuchar and Buttigieg,
yep.
those kind of came in at the 11th hour, or it was something else, but it seemed like a far lower ratio of young people went out than people were expecting.
Yep. And this is kind of where I struggle a bit, is when people see evidence of something early on, they tend to then make it a conspiracy and to see any future instance of something as is you know, being part of that conspiracy. So for example, like in 2016, I think we all know that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, through the DNC, took votes away from Bernie Sanders and pushed them toward, not took them, but she influenced, she pushed votes towards support towards Hillary Clinton from Bernie.
It's undeniable.
So Bernie got screwed over in 2016. There's a lot of resentment that still exists because of that. And then there has been media blackout efforts to suppress the support of Bernie Sanders, I think that a lot of people would acknowledge. Whether
not even just blackouts, just like misleading coverage.
That's kind of what I mean. And, hey, the support for Joe Biden is 20%. The support for Elizabeth Warren is 15%. And then we have 35% other. And you're like, who's that other?
Right.
So there have been things like that. But then on Super Tuesday, what you saw, I think what we all saw was what you just described, that the people who said that, who, you know, make a ruckus on social media and who talk about how woke they are and how it's going to be a revolution and everything, they just don't show up. And like it was a younger vote, I think, and it was a lot of people that, like, the coalition was a lot of young people and a lot of people that either don't have the time or the money or the inclination to go out and vote.
Right.
And he had older voters, people who are used to voting, and I think that's what happened. But I think people, the Bernie people, are like, see, just another example
I think it's both, though. I mean, I don't know how much you saw the stories of the 7-hour lines in California and Texas. It was tons of polling locations. Almost all of them in minority-heavy areas were closed in Texas in the, 3 weeks before Super Tuesday. There were reports, I think that was the thing, it was like there was one person who waited over 7 hours in California, but there were tons of people that waited over five. Mm-hmm. He was, the very last one, so people were covering him. He was, the last one in line.
Yeah.
And the real, again, the fact that it's not a national holiday is
absurd. That's pretty ridiculous. Yeah.
In itself is active voter suppression of everybody that isn't retired.
Mm-hmm.
And more importantly, I understand why people are reticent to vote early, because again, if you were a Buttigieg supporter, he dropped out 12 hours before you, not even, I think he dropped out at 9 p.m. the night before.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and those delegate votes for the nominee, they don't go anywhere, right? They're just lost.
It's not ranked choice voting.
Yeah.
So
no, I mean, like, they don't become open to they're just held for that candidate.
So that's
for reapportionment, I guess I should say.
If one candidate wins the majority, then yes, they don't go anywhere. if Bernie won 60% and Buttigieg at 20, and if I'm doing some bad math here, mm-hmm. I'm saying if he actually won a majority and all the other candidates wouldn't be able to you know change your thing, mm-hmm. but if he doesn't and he just wins a plurality, then you have a contested convention.
Okay.
And at that point, it's all backdoor negotiation about where the delegates pledge.
Yeah, I think that it seems like there's no way around a lot of frustration and upset people because of the whatever happens at the convention. Like, even if it seems clearer.
Right. So the obvious answer, again, is, if you don't want to wait in line for 7 hours, why don't you vote? That's what I was trying to say before we kind of pivoted, is why don't you vote early?
Mm-hmm.
But again, if things are so in flux until the last moment, I understand why people don't want to vote early. Because, again, if you voted for Buttigieg 2 days before Super Tuesday, you weren't even voting that early.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't matter at that point. And that's, they were accepting donations until 20 minutes before they made the announcement. It's not even like it was highlighted ahead of time. So I do understand why that's not necessarily like this answer to everybody's problems, you know? There was some misleading representation about the youth vote. There was like I saw this statistic being put around a lot. It was like only 13% of the, I don't remember what the cutoff was actually, maybe like 29 and younger voted, which isn't what happened. It was that of the people that voted, 13% of them fit into that demographic.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the ones where it's like one person misrepresents it and they get spread by wildfire, which to be fair, they still, so I saw some other people trying to do some math around that. It's not super easy to extract, but I think the consensus was that meant that young people underperformed or like undervoted by like 30-40%, which is still a lot. It's not that 13% went out to the polls. That would be ludicrous.
That doesn't have any connection to anything in my mind. Like 30-40 sounds like a lot to me, but it's all relative, right? So it's tough to gauge some of this stuff.
Right.
It just seems to me that Trump has a more reliable coalition of voters in his favor, and same with Biden. As you said, older voters, and the fact that it's not a holiday.
It's not a holiday. All the Red Scare tactics, for lack of a better word, is socialism.
I've kept back in 2016, I'm not really a Republican, a Democrat. Like back when in 2016 I registered Republican so that I could vote in the convention when there was like 26 candidates then primary, that's what I meant. And I did the same thing this time. So I registered Democrat this time because I wanted to influence, you know, who that candidate would be.
Absolutely.
And so it's just, it's weird who shows up to actually vote. And I actually don't remember the point that I was starting to make here.
And it's always anecdotally, everybody I know did.
Yeah.
For the most part. Maybe that's because there are people that you interact with. Obviously, that's the other thing too, right? It's like, if you're not, all the polls, not even all the polls, but all the Twitter conversation are about people that are involved and are going to, it's hard to measure the negative.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to measure the unknown. It's a lot harder to measure the unknown quantities than the known quantities. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, this, of the people that are actively talking about it, this many feel this way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to estimate the people that don't respond, that aren't involved, that aren't, you know, interacting in the same ways.
Yeah. It's weird. It does seem like it's a mirror image of the situation in 2016 with the Republicans, how the party basically split in half and there was kind of a civil war within the party, and now the same thing has happened to the Democrat side.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
I mean, over the last, in the 2010 decade, going into the early 2020s, the Republican and Democratic parties that are going to emerge are going to be entirely different, it seems to me.
Or you get Biden and you get the status quo back.
Well, I'm saying, other people are going to split off, or like new parties are going to form, or the definition, because these are fluid changing definitions to begin with. Like, what does it mean to be a Republican or a Democrat in general? There are some plank issues, but in general, it's like, you know, what a Democrat was like 80 years ago versus today.
Of course.
Yeah. So it's going to be very weird. These labels aren't going to mean much. The labels that we currently use.
Yep, that's the we're held hostage by the two-party system.
Yeah.
That, I don't know how that changes.
Well, it seems like you have to get somebody into a position where they are willing to change it, but any time somebody gets into that position, it was through the system that exists.
There's no preventing you from voting for a third party right now.
Yeah.
It's not intrinsically blocked.
I know, but it's the incentive is, why would I vote for that person? There's no chance that they're going to win.
Right.
So, but some of these systems that are in place, like the caucus system, the whatever, I think people that have no experience with them, they look at them and they say, I'm not going to look too much into detail about that thing. It probably works. Like, I'm just going to put my faith into it. And then you look in like more granular detail at these things and you go, these are so shattered and broken that it's abysmal that we're still using some of these things. And then you look at what would be required to change them. And basically it would be for a person who makes it into power through those systems to then turn around and say, hey, these are illegitimate.
Yep. That's the problem with gerrymandering too.
Yeah.
You inherently won that district, so why would you ask to reshape it then?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Even though, I mean, that's kind of, I think, the low-key, really, really, the 2020 census is going to determine a lot of things over the next 10 years. Because that's how they determine the congressional districts. And there are some messed up looking districts.
Hell yeah, there are.
Yeah. There was one that I was circling around a couple days ago of, it's basically this razor thin line that goes all the way from
Austin.
It's
like a Chile.
It's a little Chile from Austin to San Antonio.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically just like along the highway, essentially.
Oh man, yeah.
With and then there's like small blossoms into the city, so they can basically take the minority portions of that city, cram them all into one or two districts, and then have eight other districts that are the body of the rest of the city that they can break up, and then they're therefore outvoted.
It seems like some of these, and I don't know tons about the details of gerrymandering. I know that it's a problem the way that it is now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand. I think the other...
and it hurts
both
parties.
There was some pushback that specific one had been ruled too egregious and was being fixed.
Mm-hmm.
There is some level of oversight. I don't really know what the metrics are. There are metrics that determine how bad the gerrymandering is.
Yeah, basically, I've heard
ideally
that.
You
it's
have a
like
sphere.
How square the
right,
or
right,
how
right,
yeah
right,
how
exactly.
spherical how concentrated the shape is.
But I don't know, I doubt there's a law that's just like, if this ratio is greater than 0.7, all hypothetical numbers, it's illegal. You know what I mean? I feel like
I think it's area over perimeter.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I'm just saying we rarely live in a scenario where the rules are written with like hard mathematical you know what I mean? So I don't know what the metrics are that they use to determine these things. I have no idea.
With that, I remember reading a little bit about it a while back, and I think it is area perimeter ratio.
Right, to get that number. But I was saying, is that the same metrics that they determine if it's...
Oh, I doubt there's any consistent system.
That's
what happened with the caucus, too, is there was no... The people... It's like they had been given a general... Hey, here's a YouTube video. Watch it. Half of them had watched it. Half of them hadn't watched it. There was no consistency. It was like really...
Right. There's no check at the door where they give you a little quiz and make sure you understand
no
how
check.
It works.
And like, I don't think that I think that the gerrymandering process, like, I have no reason to think that it's. I mean, obviously you see what it actually looks like, but I have no reason to believe that people that actually are responsible for the districting are accountable or consistent in any way.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Yeah. So. I think that really what needs to change is a lot of the attitude that I think there is going to be a zeitgeist where, you know, people are going to have this, like, we need to clean stuff up and might as well get it done, like, in a, I don't know, 10 to 20 year period where we just, like, update all these systems. But yeah, it's getting to that point where greed and self-preservation are too predominant.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw the rumored Biden cabinet positions that were being floated.
Actually, no.
Bloomberg for he wasn't chairman of the Fed, and he wasn't the Treasury Secretary. He had a different high-level financial position.
Mm-hmm.
Jamie Dimon, who's the CEO of Chase Bank, was the leading... Again, these are all like internal emails that got leaked, so people are questioning how valid they are.
Yep.
But he was like the number one candidate for Secretary of the Treasury. Yeah, that's protecting corporate greed interests. So you're right. If there's a very clear path to nothing changing whatsoever.
Yeah, there's a very large portion of people that know exactly what's going on, that people who are informed on these matters and who lack any ability to do anything about it. And then there are a lot of people who, like, it's very clear that when you're in positions of power, the information that's around you is like the lowest quality information imaginable, because you just get this ladder of sycophantic people who are trying to like polish up what gets handed off to the person above them, and then the person above is polishing that information up. So like by the time information reaches people in positions
for
of influence,
for the most part,
a lot of it is bad information. Yeah, I'm not saying across like all information, but like
there certainly are cases of the opposite.
Yeah, but I mean that would be more like in probably Silicon Valley or something like that. I don't really think it's happening in like traditional institutions.
Exactly.
So yeah, there's going to be, once people with that have grown up in those more innovative type environments make it into older school environments and institutions, that's when a lot of these changes are actually going to be able to take place, I think. But a lot of people just say, no way. A lot of people are very cynical right now. But I think that, yeah. I think, and I understand the cynicism,
so, yeah.
but I think that there's self-fulfilling prophecy in it. Where it's like the cynicism of saying nothing can be done because
so
we haven't yet seen something done is, yeah, it's self-fulfilling. So I think that once people get a little bit of a taste of, oh, wait, this is going well, and then that kind of builds on something else, and then you start to get I definitely see that this could happen. But anyway, thank you for giving your input on on the Super Tuesday. So...
Disappointing. That's the bottom underline.
I know. I look at the options, all of the options available right now, and I just say, really, this is the best we could do? And I don't think 2020 is the year, but I think that we need to focus.
It kind of has to be the year, on the other hand.
In a way, well...
I this might be...
Yeah, say it. Just say it.
No, I'm saying this, I don't know, this might seem like a reactionary take, is I guess what I'm trying to say.
To me or to...
To anybody.
Okay.
It almost, to me at least, feels like this is the more important election than the one 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was the wake-up call. Most of the things that have been done aren't so far pushed that they can't be undone
mm-hmm.
with proper leadership and proper response.
Yeah.
So now is the time where you right the boat or you commit to where it is now.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, when you say, like, 2020 isn't the time, it kind of has to be the time.
When I say not the time, I mean not the time for having a leader be like a more somebody who really like understands newer ideas in their totality. I don't mean some like 20.
The problem with that is if you then are basically you're saying you have the Trump extreme, you have the progressive extreme,
mm-hmm.
which I don't think Bernie is that extreme.
Mm.
It's the absolute. What's the word I'm looking for? Gaslighting of American political discourse, the fact that he's considered some... That he would be center-left in every other country except for America. Biden would be considered center-right in every other country except for America.
Yeah.
And the constant shifting has led to this stratification where Bernie's some radical thinker. He's not. I'm not trying to take away credit from him. I'm just saying his ideas are not that crazy.
Yeah,
So my point is that if... Let's assume that you have the Trump extremism and, for the sake of this argument, the Bernie Sanders extreme progressivism, and you're considering Biden to be the central return to the status quo. Just the fact that you're now correcting the mistake of 4 years ago, I think in many people's eyes, is we made the correction.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like the big problem was solved. And so now you don't have that progressive option that's presenting itself. So that's the word I'm looking for. It's not presenting itself in the same way.
Mm.
Because you don't have that enormous swing over of we need to fix what's going on right now. So if it just swings halfway, that becomes the pivot point again, is I guess what I'm trying to say.
I see.
I don't know. Am I articulating this well?
Yeah, you're articulating it well. And, you know, that's a good point that, you know, I didn't want to come across as, like, dismissive before when I was saying, 2020 is not the year. I'm not saying, like, don't fight like hell and stuff like
right.
that. I'm saying that, like, to me, Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, you know, like, Trump is, like, rhetorically much worse than Bernie Sanders, and, like, it can be really, really insufferable listening to Trump. I actually tried listening to an actual YouTube video of one of his rallies the other day. It was like I had brain damage.
It's the worst, yeah.
And so I would say that with Trump and Sanders, they're a little bit like two flip sides of the same coin, in the sense of the populism aspect, in the sense of, like, one is saying, hey, it's the immigrants, the other is saying, hey, roll out the guillotines, it's the rich. And so you have, like, these two very simple narratives, and a lot of people who are, like, just so
brainwashed in their perspective, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want to push back against that characterization.
That they're equally flip side of the same. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the point I was trying to make, is that because it's basically every 4 years, the GOP comes in and has been steadily pushing more, I don't want to use the word extremist,
mm-hmm.
but more farther and farther right wing, and the general Democrat response has been to find some sort of compromise.
Yeah.
And that's why you're getting these incremental shifts where mm-hmm. the entire spectrum moves to the right. So mm-hmm. I really want to emphasize that in any other country except for America, the Sanders slate of progressivism would not be considered even especially progressive.
Mm-hmm.
That's very center left, and Biden for that point would be considered on the right wing.
Mm-hmm.
Not having socialized healthcare, having a pretty, what's the word I'm looking for?
By the way, we have a minute and 50 seconds. I don't
regressive,
know. Regressive. Regressive, yeah.
That's what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
View of stopping climate change. Those are all, again, right-wing ideas in Europe and every other country.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I understand the point that you're making, but I do want to push back. I don't really think it's true, and not between me and you, but mm-hmm. between, like, real people that really are politically uneducated,
mm-hmm.
it can give them the wrong idea.
Yeah, I hear you.
You know what I mean? It's just taking a step back and reclassifying the way that discussion is being had.
Mm-hmm.
If it had been started 6 months ago, maybe we wouldn't be at the position that we are now.
Yeah, it seems like the conversation of, like, which way the spectrum is moving and how many people are actually standing still and remaining consistent and all that is like a conversation that could go on for eternity,
because
it's like it's really difficult to gauge that. So look, we're basically out of time.
All right.
Would you be willing to read your PSA real quick?
My PSA.
Yeah.
All right.
The one that you wrote.
Yeah. Today we got the dried fruit PSA, and we got some kind of creepy cartoon pictures of a apple, banana, pear, orange. They're all kind of giving each other strange looks.
Okay.
The banana doesn't... They all have colored eyes,
mm-hmm.
except for the banana, which is just white.
You have to actually read the PSA. Yeah. You have to describe every...
I mean... Here. All right, so looking for some sweet, great-tasting snacks that are also healthy for you? Try eating dried fruits. Dried figs, apples, cherries, bananas, apricots, peaches, pears, pineapples, raisins, cranberries, prunes, blueberries, mangoes, and so many other fruits are both tasty and good for you. Many dried fruits are an excellent natural source of cancer-fighting dietary fiber,